We're rolling. Welcome back to Knox and Nature, the podcast about archery, hunting, hiking, conservation, firearms, and whatever else we feel like talking about. Episode 4 today. I actually just realized when we were talking about recording today, we didn't record last Sunday. So we recorded 2 Sundays in a row and then skipped last Sunday.
We didn't do 2 Sundays in a row. We did.
Yeah, we've been doing every other.
Well, I got really confused because I thought we were opposite of Payday Fridays, and now we're on Payday Fridays. So I think I've been way too busy. I don't know.
Next week's Payday.
Yeah, we have
coming week.
This coming Friday.
Yeah.
Episode 3 is dropping.
So, oh, right.
Yeah. So yeah. But busyness, man.
It gets you.
So we got a bit of housekeeping. What was it? Episode 2 we talked about. Pronghorns doing an out west hunt, I believe.
Yep.
And then brought it up again in episode 3. But this is a quick Google search. This is using their new AI overview tool. If you just type a question into Google. So some of these sources are like New Hampshire PBS, Oklahoma Department of Wildlife, and then the National Park Service is another one. Pulling on these different sources. And the question was raised because I referred to pronghorns as goats, which I've heard a lot of people specifically refer to them as speed goats. So
I think that's a pretty common thing.
Venison is like speed beef, right? Everybody's kind of heard that term. Same thing with pronghorns, like speed goat. So this is what Google's AI overview has to say. So pronghorns, or Antilo Capra Americana, hopefully I'm saying that right, are not directly related to goats, but their Latin name translates to American goat antelope. Pronghorns are the only living member of the Antilo Capridae family, which is distinct from the Bovidae family that includes goats, sheep, and cattle. However, pronghorns do resemble both goats and antelopes, and they predate both on the evolutionary timeline. So they had some sort of connected ancestor, but they're not an antelope or a goat. They're their own thing. The most accurate term to refer to a pronghorn is just pronghorn. It's like its own thing.
That's interesting.
So we were kind of half right and kind of half wrong, I guess, because it's like a mix between the two. But for people who would be like, they're not goats, they're antelope. They're actually not antelope either. So, but interesting.
Yeah, it is.
And I think people, like when someone refers to a whitetail as speed beef, they're saying that because venison can taste like beef, but it's not. So it's like, oh, it's speed beef, right? Faster version.
I've actually never heard that, speed beef.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Have you heard that, Jared?
I've heard it quite a few times.
Really?
I've also heard pronghorn called sheep, so.
Sheep?
Sheep.
Yeah, pronghorn sheep.
Well, I mean, they would be, I guess, related to sheep because they're related to the Bovidae family, so, which would also include cattle. And I think that has something to do with chambered stomachs or, you know, I don't know. But that would be my guess, though, is that pronghorn. I've never had pronghorn. I heard it's pretty good. But my guess would be their meat resembles goats, and that's why they're referred to as speed goats.
Yeah. I heard they smell like Fritos.
I've heard that, too. Did you see that Meat Eater episode with Luke Combs? Steve Rinella was explaining to Luke Combs after you shoot one. It's like, yeah, when you open these up, it kind of smells like Fritos. And he's like, well, bust out the bean dip, brother. He was just so into it. But, yeah. So I guess we kind of sort of know what we're talking about, but be careful, I guess.
I say 50% of the time we know what we're talking about.
Yeah, do your own research with that
stuff.
We're
not experts in any field.
No.
We can pretend we are, though.
We're experienced in certain fields, but we were talking about our first out west hunt ever, so you know, it's different. But yeah, finally got around to shooting some trad bows this afternoon, or this evening, I guess, before the podcast. So that was fun. I think we figured out spine weight for mine, because I think I can use a 340 with a 150 grain point and be just fine.
Yeah, that bow must be cut to center, or even a little past it.
That Kodiak?
Yeah, because I'm surprised at how stiff an arrow it likes.
Yeah, it was surprising because that Easton, It's an Axis. I think it's actually like right around 600 grains, because I'm pretty sure my setup with a 100 grain point on that arrow was like 580 grains or something like that. And I have a 125 grain point on it, so it should be right around 600 grains, which is a good trad weight arrow.
I have a scale of trad arrow.
I do too.
Oh, do you? Okay.
I just don't remember. And I've weighed it before. I know we talked about it. I just don't remember what it weighed.
Yeah.
Because what I was going to do was buy the Easton Axis traditional arrows. So the same arrow, just with a wood grain wrap on it, and build that arrow the exact same way for the trad setup. But they're a lot more expensive than the blemished ones. So,
yeah. The Gold Trip traditional, the blemished ones, it's a safe bet.
And it's a solid arrow. I mean, mm-hmm. We've shot them before. They're pretty durable for what they are. I mean, you can miss and still be okay. So,
yeah, I've had good luck with them.
What was your first impressions of trying to be accurate with a recurve bow, Jared?
I mean, I was very surprised at how easy it was. I thought I was going to blow right over the target or way off to the side, or, you know, just completely miss it. I was pretty surprised to actually hit the target, and then let alone actually hit right where I was aiming. So that was pretty cool. Still working out, trying to get like a reference point to aim with, but
yeah,
it's definitely very, very, very different from compound. But yeah, I could have stayed out there and kept shooting for a while. It was a lot of fun.
It is fun. I will say it gets significantly more difficult when you start changing the distances. So we shot pretty much at the same distance, you know, what we were 12 yards, 15 yards for most of that practice. As soon as you start backing up to like 20, 30 yards, it gets way harder to find consistency. It's
exponentially harder.
But you also might be one of those guys that just instinctively know how to shoot a trad bow. I mean, there are guys genuinely that don't need an aiming system. It doesn't matter the distance. They just walk out, boom, plug it.
Yeah. The other thing is, like, I was talking to Justin about it a little bit, was just the difference. I kept waiting for the resting point when you get a full draw, like compound, and
the
you
draw
don't get
stop.
That. It's,
yeah.
You're just sitting there holding the whole weight the whole time. That was definitely a little more challenging. You got to be a little quicker with it. That's for sure. You don't have time to sit there and fiddle around for a while trying to aim.
It's also using a lot more of that muscle. Because a 50-pound recurve is significantly harder to shoot than a 50-pound compound.
Yeah, and I have not been shooting my bow as much as I should, especially if I'm going to be archery hunting this year. So we need to get on top of that.
Yeah, we'll get together. We should just make it a thing when we record. We'll just shoot bows, whatever it is.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Because we can get out some distance here and go out back there and stretch our legs a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I'd actually really like to do that. But the other thing, like I've always told people, whether they're you meet someone at tech, somebody messages me, or just getting somebody into archery, and they're like, hey, how do I increase my draw weight, or how can I find more consistency? You know, I'm hitting the gym, I'm trying to build muscle, whatever, and that's great. But honestly, the best thing that you can do to work those muscles is to shoot your bow, because you can do cable flies and rows and things like that will work those same muscle groups, but they're not working them in the same way that you're going to work them with your bow, because your draw cycle is going to change a movement versus, you know, like a cable row. It's very different. You get out there and you shoot your bow over and over again, that repetitive motion will slowly build muscle. And if you want to bump your poundage up, you know, shoot 2 weeks, shoot every day, and then bump it up 5 pounds. And then shoot another 2 weeks every day, you should be able to bump that up pretty easily. So
that's what I did with trad bows. I started at 40 pounds and just kind of worked up to, you know, whatever. Now I shoot 50, but,
and I don't think
I've shot heavier, you know, I've shot 70, 75 pound long bows.
So forgive my ignorance, but when you want to bump up your poundage, you got to get a new bow or,
not on your bow. We can just tighten that limb bolt.
Oh,
because that bow will go to 70 pounds, and you're probably at 55 or 60 right now.
Nice.
I don't know. But, yeah, so that is the advantage to anyone getting into archery. You might be tempted, if you have the financial ability to do so, to go out and buy a brand new bow, you know, flagship or whatever. And it's great. You'd probably find success with it with a quality product. But starting off with something that is beginner friendly, you know, a lot of these modular systems like a Mission, which is made by Matthews Archery, but they're much more beginner friendly because you don't have to buy new mods. The cams themselves are adjustable. And then you also have adjustable draw weights. So for instance, on like a new Matthews, if you go out and buy a lift, you can buy mods to switch it from, oh, I want to go from 70 to 80 pounds. You buy a mod that has control over your draw length, your draw weight, and your let off percentage is built into one mod. So it's pretty cool, but the difference is you're paying, you know, $1,400 retail for a bow like that versus a Mission Craze 2, probably retailed for $499, and you can have that bow for life. You know, are you going to get the same kind of speeds you're going to get from a brand new flagship bow? Probably not, but it's still going to be consistent enough and quality enough to be able to harvest a deer. You know, for the longest time, I recommended the Diamond Infinite Edge to beginners because it was that adjustability. And now I would say, you know, a Mission Craze 2, and I think their new one's called the Hammer or the MXR or something like that.
I think they had a Craze 3 too.
They might have, yeah.
Yeah.
It's
because I know this one was like, I don't know if this one's Craze 2 or Craze 1. No, it's Craze 2. But yeah, I mean, I've had it since I was probably 14 or 15.
Yeah, that would make sense.
It's still, I mean, I can still shoot it right now, so.
Yep. Yeah, and it's got a draw length from like, I think it's like 19 to 30 inches or something like that. And it goes from like 50 to 70 pounds. Yeah, they're crazy. Yeah. The Diamond's even more adjustable.
I want to say that it goes up to 75 pounds, but I could be wrong on that.
I honestly don't know.
I think it goes all the way down to like 15. It's got a very large range.
Right, because it's really...
Think I was probably 16 or 17, and I got a nice little 5-point with it.
Yeah.
I think I was only at like 40 pounds, and it still did a number on the deer. I think we were just using Muzzy broadheads and it fixed blade. It was pretty... It worked great. Deer ran maybe 50 yards.
Yeah. I got a sweet setup this year for an arrow. Yeah, sweet setup. It's a Victory VAP TKO. So it's 4mm micro diameter. Mm. They're the V1s, so they're match grade, thousandths straightness. It's like 460 grains. But then I also paired that with the Rec HXP. So it's going to have a 2.25-inch cutting diameter. And the slap cut of that thing is almost 3 inches from all of the testing. It's insane.
That's nuts.
Like, you're literally shooting a blender at a deer. It's unbelievable, dude.
Wow.
Mechanicals are just... they're advancing. And, you know, I like that broadhead for a lot of reasons. But it's just impressive, you know, that they can get that to happen. I actually just saw a post from them today, that four blade fixed point I was showing you, the FX4.
Yeah.
They did a sound test, like a decibel reading, comparing it to a field point. It shot quieter than the field point. The field point was like 71.2 or something like that, and the FX4 was 69.8. It was actually quieter than a field point, supposedly.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It was ridiculous.
Huh.
Because it's what do they call that? Vented blades,
mm-hmm.
where it's like open. So you'd think that would like create
like
a whistle.
Those are noisier.
Right. Well, think of like a G5 Montech.
Right.
Those are one of the loudest broadheads I've ever shot.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was sweet. I am really excited for you to get into bow hunting though, Jared. Like, again.
Yeah. I haven't done it since... Probably since I killed that deer. I don't think I've gone out archery hunting since maybe the year after, but
I think it's just like as you get older, you look for another way to like relight that fire, that passion. So for me, you know, originally I had my hunting bow. I had that for like 4 years, and then I bought my 3D bow, And then I was like back into it. I'm like, yes, this is the coolest sport ever. You know what I mean? And then I had that for a few years. And then, you know, you got me into trad archery. And I was like, yes, this is the coolest thing ever. Like, I love shooting. I'm going to shoot a deer with a trad bow. And I go practice. I'm like, I'm not shooting a deer with a trad bow. I suck. But that, I think, is plays into that because, like, as you get older and you're looking for that, you pick up old hobbies again. And it's like, yeah, this is cool. But it consumes a lot of time. I mean, you have to dedicate some time to be effective with it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so
you can't just pick it up. I mean, with a compound,
you kind of can, but you're
a little bit. But even that, like,
you're not going to shoot as well as you would.
No, and you'd be good to 20 yards, like what most people do. You're running,
yeah,
you know, a tree stand with 20 yards in front of the, you know, your shooting lane or whatever.
Yeah,
you're going to be fine. But to be really effective, you need to spend some time at it.
Yeah, I mean, if I didn't shoot my bow for like 6 months, and somebody was like, "Hey, no, your bow hasn't changed. It's still sighted in. It's still tuned. Drop an arrow in there at 30 yards." Like, I'd be able to do it to kill a deer.
Right.
But I wouldn't want to go shoot a tack event with a compound, not practicing before.
I mean, I didn't, since that archery tournament, I didn't really shoot my bow that much, and I shot last weekend, and I was consistently 3 or 4 inches low.
Again.
For whatever reason.
Because you had that a little bit before we went to the tournament.
Yeah. And it seems like when I stop shooting, and then I pick it back up again for whatever reason, I think I'm dropping
that would my make bow sense, arm. Yeah. But that, or I know we talked about
it, just takes a little bit to kind of get into it.
Yeah. And we talked about your peep potentially moving. We could look at that if we shoot next week or whatever.
The thing that was weird is that all ranges. I mean, from 20 yards to...
It was only 3 or 4 inches?
About low. Yeah, it was just consistently that 3 or 4 inches low.
Yeah, that might be a form piece.
Yeah.
Because you didn't have that when you were shooting, preparing for the tournament?
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Nope.
It might be just one of those things you got to build up those muscles. Because it's not like your bow's the lightest. It's not like super heavy, but it's heavier than a recurve bow your longbow.
Yeah.
You know, so especially your longbow. And that thing doesn't weigh anything.
No. Especially if I take the quiver off.
Oh, yeah.
It's so light. It's so awesome.
It is awesome. It like you want to talk about an ultralight setup. You know, you walk into the woods with like a tethered one stick and a platform, and you go longbow hunt out of a tree saddle, and your entire setup weighs, you know, fucking 3 pounds. You know, it's like,
be sweet.
Yeah, just ridiculous. But what are you just gonna bow hunt preset stands this year, you think, Jared? Are you gonna try to like make a bow hunting specific spot on your property?
So we've got a few stands. We just go with classic ladder stands, so I'll have to get out there, and the big thing right now is going to be getting out there, letting my dad know, hey, I want to bow hunt this year, and getting a spot set up, getting the lanes cleared, you know, all that setup that goes with it, and prepping, you know, either finding a spot over the food plot to get them in close, or, you know, setting up the tree stand closer to where the deer tend to go through their running lanes or whatever.
Yeah, if you could find like a bottleneck where they're coming into the food plot.
We've got a few bottlenecks and whatnot, but it's like most of them are way down at the end of the firing lanes. So, and it just, there's not really a good way to hike in there. So,
yeah, that's the other part that sucks.
All that stuff, and you don't really want to screw it up too much for rifle either.
Yeah, no,
I'm not the only one
definitely
hunting out of my rifle spot. My dad's got a buddy who hunts there. Usually it's like once I take my deer and get done hunting, he'll go out, or he'll go out for opening of rifle or whatever, you know. I think this year
when you're not there.
Yeah, pretty much. I think this year's probably gonna end up that he and I are gonna hunt it together because I'm not up north, so we'll see how that works out. I mean, I've hunted together before, but we might be fighting each other to get the big buck.
Yeah, or just shoot them during bow season.
Yeah.
You know, right. Whatever.
Yeah.
Well, so a lot of those stands, like if it's set up for rifle, because I know your mom shoots a crossbow at least, but...
She doesn't actually hunt on the family property. We've got some family friends that have a good set of property or a nice little section close by. And they've got huge bucks over there. So she loves to hunt over there, and she uses a pop-up blind. with the crossbow.
And so this and it's a pop-up blind that's set up before, like, yeah, she leaves
permanent.
It out year-round.
It's okay. Permanent, yeah. It's not year-round. It gets set up, like, right before archery
right,
season.
Right, but she doesn't, like, pack it in with her. And
no.
Yeah.
No.
That would be pretty sweet, though.
A pop-up blind?
And then...
I've done it for turkeys. You set it up, like... Right.
And then all of our rifle blinds are, you know, your classic plywood and 2x4 permanent structure.
Yeah.
So.
Well, those are nice when, especially when it's, you know, seems always like November 17th, we get some sort of massive cold front that moves in and it's 19 degrees outside during the day. It's the middle of rifle season.
Oh, my favorite is going out and seeing all the snow on the pine trees and just all the branches are down super low. You got to go out there and shake them so you can actually see down your firing lanes, but everything looks sweet. Everything's quieter. You can hear everything so much better. It's
Bow hunting in the snow is not fun.
Yeah, I believe it.
When so like on your bow,
I had actually I think that 5-point that I got, it was snowing. It was cold. Like I had
you got to be careful because that's got a slider rod for the cables versus like mine and your bow. You have some sort of different system there, but like my bows have the roller guard on them, so nothing's sliding back and forth. But that cable slide, I had one on my Hoyt, and it'll freeze up if it's snowing and it's melting on that metal rod.
Mm-hmm.
It'll freeze up, so you go to draw and you can't come to full draw because that ice builds up. So you gotta be careful. But that almost got me one time.
I've never thought about that. That would suck.
It's just it's so impractical to bow hunt in the snow. It makes no sense, but it's arguably more fun.
Oh, it's so much fun.
Have you guys ever
I hate is running like sticks in a platform or whatever, and you're trying to like put your sticks on the tree and it's just your hands are just frozen.
Yeah, and everything's aluminum, so
yeah, and it's just cold. And like you can't like I don't like to wear gloves because then you can't feel stuff and you're trying to do straps and
I do usually thin fingerless gloves.
Oh, yeah.
So you still have the dexterity, but you have something on your hands.
Right. Yeah, they make some nice gloves that have got actually built in, like the wrist strap is meant so that your release, like if you wear your release is one of the ones that you wear around your wrist instead of just like grabbing it or whatever, they make gloves that are meant for that. And then it's got the mitten flip over the fingers.
Yeah.
So you can go. I was going to ask, do you guys, when you're hunting with bow, do you guys stand up, shoot the bow, or do you shoot sitting down?
So it depends on the stand, because if I'm in a hang-on stand, a lot of times they don't have a guard around them. Like if you're in a traditional ladder stand, you typically have like a shooting shelf around you for like a rifle. And in that case, I would stand up. If I'm in like a traditional hang-on that has like no armrests or anything on the sides, and I can shoot sitting down, I'll shoot sitting down just to minimize movement. Most of the bow hunting I do now is out of my saddle, so I'm leaning anyway. You're basically standing the whole time.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter, but I would say it depends on the stand. If you've never practiced sitting down, you should stand up to take your shot.
Yeah, but so we always shot sitting down just because we were worried that standing up was going to scare away the deer. And
I always sit down.
All of our...
As long as you don't
hit
anything,
took that guard right off.
Yep.
Or I think you can flip them up as well.
Yep.
Unbolt them.
Yep.
And then for a while, we did a ton of work on the property. We used to have the box blind was just on the ground, and it was in a completely different location. Like all that, there was no food plot or anything. I think this is one of the years that you could do like 5-gallon bait, and we would actually archery hunt out of the box blind.
The only time you have to
test it out to make sure you could shoot, and it was just enough room in there to get a full draw.
You have to be careful with horizontal slits because you can see, like, your pins will clear, but sometimes that distance from your pin to your arrow will actually hit the blind. Because I've almost shot through the side of a blind doing that before.
This was actually...
My dad did that and exploded an arrow.
Yeah.
I mean, it just leaves the bow and just whack.
Yeah.
Yeah. This blind was, like, just enough to get out there, like
when
you're before you draw the arrow back, the arrow's sticking out of the window, and they are horizontal windows, so it's
what I usually do is I run my harness just tight enough so I can lean out so I can like sit on the edge of the seat, especially with the longbow. You know, you got a
ladder
stand or whatever. I take the rail off, but I have it so I can lean against the harness So I'm actually kind of leaning out so I can get my limbs past the...
Yeah. The thing you know, have everything. To, the thing that I had to watch, if you're in a ladder stand that has the sides on it and you're sitting down, you might be able to draw sideways, because I've shot a lot of them sideways out of hang-ons, and it doesn't matter because there's nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're drawing sideways, you can get to full draw with your limbs over the edge. But when you go to tilt the bow down, if that string touches the side of it and the ladder stand's putting pressure on that string, you're not going to hit where you want to hit.
Right. I smacked my bottom limb. I shot a rabbit out of my stand.
Yep.
And my bottom limb hit the platform. Just, it didn't break the bow, but it was.
Didn't probably scared the shit out of you.
Oh, yeah. I was like, I just messed up that bow.
Yep.
And I was borrowing it. It wasn't even mine.
Oh.
And I was like, oh.
Did you tell the guy at least?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, and it's still, the bow was fine. It was an old Darton Ranger in the 60s.
A 1960s compound?
No.
Oh.
Recurve.
Recurve. Okay. Yeah. I was like, holy cow. Surprised that thing probably had steel cables on it.
Right.
Actually, my
compound Hoyt, with wooden limbs.
My Hoyt had steel cables on it.
Really?
Yep. Either 97 or 92 Hoyt Mystic Rebel.
Old compounds are wild.
So this bow was marketed, like back in the day, they would make just a lower poundage bow. And so this was designed for, you know, youth hunters and women shooters that are shooting lower poundage. And, yeah, I was 11 when I got the bow, and I was shooting 50 or 55 pounds at a 26 inch draw length. But yeah, I had steel cables and a slide roller for the, or a cable slide for the guides.
That guy in, do you remember that gun shop that used to be in Kalkaska there?
Mm-mm.
It was out there for a while. It's closed now, but he knew I was into archery or whatever and old bows and stuff, and he had, someone gave him, I mean, it was three or four, like, 80s compounds. And he just gave them to me because he's like, I'm just going to throw these away. I don't know what to do with them. And I messed around with those a little bit. And it was pretty fun. I mean, they all had kind of like the fixed pin, you know, brass, you know, sight pins and whatnot.
Those are the coolest, too.
It was cool. And I took one of them I took the limbs off and put, I think that was a Darton. I think it was a Darton. And I took the limbs off and put recurve, like Sam McSage limbs on it.
Oh, hell yeah.
And turned it into a recurve. And like, The limb angle was super weird on it, so I got 50-pound Sam McSage limbs, and the thing had to be drawn 80. Like, I couldn't get to full draw.
Yeah.
And it was 80 or 85. Like, it was wicked.
There's a lot of guys that'll do that. I met a guy at Gothier's there,
mm-hmm.
And this kid it was either in shop class or as like a separate project from a shop class, whatever. But made his own handle, like his own riser, to accept ILF fitment recurve limbs.
Yeah.
And then he just bought some, like, you know, middle-of-the-road recurve limbs and had his own recurve.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's pretty cool. That's a cheap way to do it.
You can buy the ILF limb pockets.
Uh-huh.
And, like, we could make them on the router at work, like, mill out a handle.
You could mill them. You could get a route file to do it out of aluminum and mm-hmm. then just weld it together.
Yeah, you can make aluminum. That'd be sweet.
That would be really sweet. Because then you could skeletonize it.
Mm-hmm. Get the old TIG welder out.
Well, you wouldn't even have to do that. As long as you get penetration, I would grind mine flat and paint it. I'm not leaving it raw aluminum, but if you guys wanted to. I mean,
how cool would it look if it's just raw aluminum, though?
It would oxidize, so it would look cool for a little bit once it's, like, polished.
Like, clear coat it.
If you got some stainless steel and got that rainbow going on.
Yeah, but it'd also be fucking 8 pounds.
Yeah, but it
we
would
also
look cool.
Cannot cut stainless on our router or any steel.
But I bet you could cut that thin stuff.
I don't think so.
Yeah, you could get a carbide bit to cut that thin stuff.
That router's not rigid enough. We tried. Like, we've cut that. It's like ACM except it's steel instead of aluminum.
Yeah, that SCM.
Yeah, whatever that is, and it cuts like shit. Like, it doesn't do well.
Yeah, or it's steel composite substrate, so yeah. It's SCS.
That router is just not strong enough. it just flexes and does all sorts of weird shit.
Oh, the head?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
The spindle's not.
Wow.
It's just not made for it, you know?
No, it makes sense. I mean, it, whatever.
Yeah.
I would... Magnesium would be the coolest one. I've always thought that. Magnesium. I don't know why people moved away from that.
Light
I guess just because... Well, yeah, I mean,
how often
do you have fire around your bow? Probably not very often.
The Bear factory in Grayling burnt down, I think, 3 times because they were making, like, that old sea handle that I have is magnesium.
Right. Well, if you have all those shavings around, that's dangerous.
That, and when they powder coated them, you know, like, they have that, you have to, like, electrify them or whatever. Yeah. They had just a 110 wire hanging across the shop that they would hang them on.
Oh, boy.
So it was just live all the time. And then all those magnesium shavings and shit, like...
Yeah, that's the dangerous part.
Yeah,
but it
burned out a couple times.
But it is lighter than aluminum. Yeah. I always thought it was more... It was because they're more expensive.
I bet that C handle that I have weighs just as much as your aluminum one. And yours is an A. You know, it's longer.
It's a 17-inch handle, I think. The A handle?
I don't remember.
Part of this audio thing is getting that mic close to your face. Just so you know.
What do you mean?
Right there. That's where you want to be.
Yeah. It's my first rodeo.
That's all right.
I guess it's my fourth.
When people complain about it, I'll just tell them it's your fault.
I think it's some sort of tech issue.
We're still learning. It's all right. So, let's mention this quickly. I think the Olympics are done now. I believe, because the United States took the most amount of medals. So we tied with China for gold medals at 40. And I want to say it was 125 total medals from the Olympics. And China was like 93 or 95 or something like that.
Hmm.
So we did pretty good. But
is that common? Do we usually win?
I think the United States wins most of the time, yeah.
Okay. That checks out.
Someone should Google that and fact check it.
Yeah, we can fact check that. But in the archery space, Brady Ellison won bronze at the Olympics with Casey Caulfield for the mixed team event. And then Brady Ellison won silver in men's individual, which went down to a shoot-off. So they were tied going into it. They both had four ends, I think, is what it would have, or they both had five ends. And then they tied in the last end. They both shot 30s.
Wow.
And then they went to a shoot-off, and it was close. You know, they both missed by a couple inches or something like that, but it was annoying.
You imagine that pressure?
Annoying.
That's got to be.
Were you sitting there watching it live the whole time? Or?
No, I didn't watch it live because I think it happened like 4 p.m. our time.
Oh, gotcha.
4 or 5 p.m. our time. And
I saw it pop up on my computer at work. It has a little...
Yeah,
you know, info thing, and it said archery, and I was like, "Oh, I should look at that."
But no, I need to go back and
watch it on YouTube or something.
If you have a Peacock subscription, they've got all of them.
Oh, really?
Yep, You can go back and watch it. It is a good match. Like, if you're not into it, it's like watching golf. Guys would be annoyed with it, but
yeah, we could pull it up on the TV right after the podcast.
We could if you want.
Yeah, I got Peacock.
Cool. That'd be cool. I watched Olympic golf the other day. It was like Olympic. It was the women's, whatever. I was at Twin Birchie and dinner, and they just had it on. It was pretty funny. Like it was interesting.
What's funny is like, it's basically just a PGA event, because the PGA Tour has all golfers from like any country.
Yeah, I was surprised at how bad they were. Like there was people. I mean, the courses were really.
You said you were watching women's.
Yeah, but. The courses were super hard. Like I was looking at it and was like, God damn, like
that's the
rough.
Olympics, dude.
Right. I mean, but still, like they were going in the water and like it was It was pretty funny.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so Hideki Matsuyama, for example, he won the Masters just a couple of years ago. And then like Scottie Scheffler is one of the better golfers, one of the best. Xander Schauffele was winning at the Olympics. It's like all of those guys are names that we would hear of in a normal PGA event. So it's kind of funny.
Right. They probably get paid a lot better at a PGA event, though.
Yeah, I don't know if they win money at the Olympics. I think it's just a gold medal.
I don't think anyone wins money.
Have you ever looked at the purses for a PGA event?
No.
Dude, some of them are like $250 million for really? First place. Yeah, if you're on the tour,
damn.
Yeah, you can get a lot of money. And those guys are doing just fine.
Hmm. I should take up golf.
Yeah. So the one other piece from the Olympics that I thought was cool was that Katie Ledecky won her fourth straight Olympic gold medal in the 800 meter freestyle. So it's like Michael Phelps aura for swimming, but for women swimming. Fourth straight gold medal in the Olympics.
Huh.
In one event.
So she's just on top.
She's just a badass, just fucking getting after it. Yeah. Wow. Which is cool. I am disappointed. Like, Brady Ellison's the most decorated archer in the world that's not Korean. We always lose to the Koreans.
Hmm.
They're too good.
Yeah. It's whatever.
Yeah. It's, I mean, whatever. It creates good competition. And those guys are dedicated.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the guy that took the gold medal, he doesn't shoot sevens or eights. Like, if he misses, he's missing a nine. And he's, like, pissed that he shot a nine at 70 meters.
It's crazy.
70 meters with a recurve bow.
Right. Those guys are good.
And their guys are shooting tens consistently.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Yeah.
They got some cool bow setups too, though. They're not shooting like,
no, it's not like barebow.
Yeah,
you know, they got a sight and stabilizers and a clicker and stuff. Right. But still,
I like watching barebow. Barebow's fun.
Yeah, barebow is usually 20 meters, I think, or 30 meters,
something like that. Yeah.
Just otherwise, guys would miss the target in competition, which nobody wants to see. So
no, it would be funny though, like best guys in the world, and they like completely miss.
That would be funny. But 70 meters is hard to do with a compound bow and hit a 4-inch circle every time.
What is that in yards?
77 yards.
Oh, yeah.
That's hard to do with a compound to hit a 4-inch circle for 18 arrows because you do 6 legs of 3. So, yeah, that would be difficult.
Yeah.
You know, and then you factor in the point of, like, it's a recurve bow, so you're holding a lot more weight. And you have to have a consistent release every single time.
What are those guys pulling, do you know?
I don't.
I feel like it's like 35, 40 pounds.
That's what I would guess is like 40. I think I forget the name of the Hoyt bow that everybody's shooting this year. But I think that bow, those limbs that everyone's raving about, because it's ILF limbs.
Mm-hmm.
But these Hoyt limbs were like, I guess, one of the lighter weight, like better, whatever. I think they're 42 pounds, most of them.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it would depend on the length of your riser and, you know, how far you're actually drawing your draw length, right? But it's weird. I don't know. I think that's part of my consistency is I don't think I draw to the same length every time because there's no draw stop on a recurve.
Probably not. I shot with a clicker a little bit, and it was really hard, and it shows you how inconsistent you are.
Yeah, I would bet.
It's nuts. I took it off immediately. I mean, I shot with it probably for a couple weeks trying to get used to it.
Was that when you were shooting indoor? Or was that something
else? Yeah. No, it was when I was shooting indoor. I was shooting the Sunday League.
Was that like Vegas 3-spot or 5-spot?
No. Yes, but no. So the recurve or the stick bow guys have just one. But everyone that was shooting like a compound or whatever, or if you're really good, you could shoot a 5-spot.
Yeah. I like 3-spot better.
Yeah, it might have been 3-spot. I can't remember.
I mean,
sure. It's been a while.
3-spot's just, you get a more of a break, but in between.
Right.
So
yeah, I can't remember what we shot. It was a fun league though, over in Grayling.
Yeah.
They had the indoor. They did every Sunday. They have that, and then they did a trad league every Tuesday. So I shot both of those.
Dude, the trad guys are, if you're a true traditional archery bro, those guys are so passionate about traditional archery. They won't even touch a compound.
Oh, no. That guy that I know, Jeff.
Yeah.
He lives over in Vienna. And, yeah, he's diehard. Like,
they don't even own a compound.
No. He doesn't. I mean, I'm sure he's shot them, but
He just doesn't care for it.
That small group of guys, just, like, that's all they have. Man, Jeff is really good. Like, he wins the league every single year.
He won this year, yeah.
Yeah.
At the Northwoods Club.
Yeah, and he won at the Northwoods. I mean, but that's what he does all the time. Like, he's super consistent.
Does he bow hunt, too?
Mm-hmm.
So he's probably pretty good then. Like, probably pretty successful.
I don't know for sure. I don't know if I've kept up with his hunting stuff.
Well, I don't know, because I know a lot of guys that are, like, really successful target shooters that you put a deer in front of them and they can't do it. They just,
right.
like, would completely miss.
Yeah, I know he's taken deer, but I don't know if he does it every year for sure.
Maybe he's not a big bow hunter. I don't know.
I don't think he's huge into the, I mean, he's not, I mean, I don't know. I'm just friends with him on Facebook and met him a couple times, but I don't think he has the same passion for bow hunting as he does just shooting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a completely different animal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he has a range set up in his base. He shoots all winter long, and, like,
that's sweet.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I gotta bring that AccuBow over. I think you guys would have fun with that.
It would be fun.
It's
be something fun we can do in the winter.
Yeah, and it keeps those muscles in check.
Is it like something that you project on a wall, or is it you set up with a TV or what?
Yeah, you clip your phone into it, and then if you have like a what do they call that for iPhones? AirPlay to your TV.
Yeah.
You can, like, mirror your screen onto the TV.
Oh, that's cool.
Or like a Chromecast. You can, yeah. So I could be shooting, you know, I could be hunting whitetails in this chair, and then you guys can see my screen over there. But I always did, you can also shoot, like, Olympic tournament events.
Oh, really?
So I was doing that. Yeah, and you're shooting by yourself. You're not, like, competing against anyone. But
I think we should shoot cool training tool. The Gauthier's, you know, their indoor range this winter.
The dart system or their just the range?
Both.
The dart system's garbage because it's old.
I thought it was fun. I mean, it's fun to do.
It's off. It needs to be recalibrated.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's like 2 inches off.
I always shot it with a trad bow, so I wasn't good enough to tell.
That's fair. I don't like indoor ranges because you can only shoot 20 yards most of the time. So I need to find a range that'll let me shoot like 50 yards.
I don't know if they have that around here.
Probably not, but it's way more fun. Like, I shoot, if I'm shooting at 20 yards, and this might be why guys don't practice very often, because if I shoot 20 yards with my bow, I get 4 or 5 groups in and I'm bored.
Yeah.
I'm just like, okay, like, look, this, I'm either hitting where I want to hit or, like, I have already corrected, you know, like, let's go on to the next thing.
Right.
But unless you're competing.
It's fun for a trad bow and 20 yards.
Oh, a trad bow would be fine.
Shooting indoors.
Yeah. They don't have a lot of trad stuff there.
No.
So you'd want to make sure you have your setup, like, dialed before we go shoot. But I would shoot the dart system with a trad bow.
Yeah, it's fun.
It'd be cool.
I haven't done it in a few years.
What I want to do is, my parents are talking about building a barn dominium, and they're going to have the garage side, whatever. They just got this other piece of property. And I want to put have enough room for a range in there to be able
That'd
to.
That'd be sweet.
Like, ideally, I'd have like a, probably would only be able to get like 30, maybe 40 yards, depending on how long we make that garage. But then I could have 3D targets like either side of it and be able to shoot. The problem with that is, like, unless you're shooting straight down a line at a wall, if you miss with it with anything, but it's a lot easier to miss with a trad bow, that arrow's just skipping off the concrete and hitting whatever paint can you got in the back on the shelf, because it's just,
I shot in my garage a couple times and I've done that. I shot into my oil jug, just started leaking all over the place. I was like, god damn it.
I think, like, I know a couple of guys that have basement ranges, like 5-10 yards,
mm-hmm.
and they just shoot a bag target all winter. Like Ryan.
Yeah.
Ryan just shoots a bag target all winter.
Right, just to keep up on it. I mean,
yeah, and he comes out and, you know, we meet up in March and shoot together for the first time, and he's fucking dialed.
Yeah.
And I'm, like, still figuring my sight tape out. I'm like,
right.
I'm so behind, you know. But there's a lot of good tools now. Like, we have it really good compared to guys that were shooting bows even 10 years ago.
You know,
technology's progressed so much, to where it's like you don't even have to worry about that. You're living it up. Granted, I am shooting a 10-year-old bow. It'll be 15 years old actually this year.
Or really?
14 years old.
That Matthews?
Am I doing that? So it's the 2013. Yeah, it's a 2013, but it was released in 2012, and we're going into 2025, so it'll be a 13-year-old bow this year.
I wanted to guess that.
Yeah. The camel one. The white one's a 2019.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense. I think I've only seen your white one. I don't think I've seen the camel one.
Probably, because we've only shot 3D together with those.
Yeah. But
I got a lot of work to do to my hunting bow, because I gotta tune it, and I gotta finish building my arrows. I gotta decide. I've got a really like $60 True Glow sight on it right now, just really cheap. It's what I've always shot on the bow, and I haven't decided if I wanted to put something a little nicer on it or what I'm gonna do. I think for this year I'll probably stick with it, just because I haven't decided, and I struggled with a slider last year. I had that single pin on my Traverse last year hunting with it, and I struggled to like try to film a deer, change my sight tape, and then have the deer stay there long enough to do both of those things, range it, and then shoot it. You know, it's like,
yeah, it's hard. That's a little much.
So I think I'll just stick with a multi-pin sight for this year.
I always set mine because I have the single pin slider, but it's got two like dots on it or
that's
whatever.
That's what I've got on the bow now, but yeah.
So I always pre-range everything that like in my little shooting area or whatever, and I put my farthest pin or whatever, that bottom of the single pin, set at the longest distance that I can shoot. And then I kind of know where that is. Like if it's 40 yards, I know my other one's at 20. So yeah. I kind of have the whole area covered. And then if the deer's in between there, I'll just go in between the pins.
So what screwed me last year is I knew of a tree that was exactly 40 yards. And a doe was walking on a trail that would have led her like right to that tree. So I set my pin to 40 yards, and then she walked up this embankment, but the angle of it, she was actually walking further away from me. I didn't realize how far she was walking away, so I thought it was like 43, and I let one rip and I shot, you know, right underneath her,
right.
And then I went over to where she was standing and ranged the tree that I was sitting in, and it was 46 yards. So that 5 yards difference was, you know, and I'm aiming low, like
right.
Bottom third of the lung, but yeah, it was enough to drop that 6 yards, you know, which I guess makes sense. Yeah. You know, I mean, at closer distances, I would say most of the time, every yard is about an inch, you know, pat like 30 yards, you know, if your pin's set for 30 and you're at 31, you'll shoot an inch low, so on and so forth.
Wow.
But and it depends on your setup, but yeah, with that bow specifically.
So talking about your setup, I'm curious, a little more like a hunting topic here.
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys real superstitious when it comes to hunting? Like, or are you constantly changing out new gear? Or do you have to have the exact same setup every time?
No, I'm superstitious as fuck. So last year when I couldn't get a shooter buck into range during bow season, I stopped wearing Sitka gear and went back to Mossy Oak.
You went back to your original stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I've got to change something, and I don't know what else I can change. I mean, you're talking about, this is early November. So it was, you know, like November 6th or November 8th, and the bucks are already on their feet. Like, they're chasing, and we're right before rifle season. It's this last push. I should be able to get deer in range, but I couldn't. I'm hunting scrape lines. Like, I'm doing everything I know possible to have a successful hunt and at least see a buck that's going to be on the move, right? And I would get deer at 75 yards, you know, 80 yards, 100 yards, 65 yards. And I'm like, eh, but there's a tree in the way, you know? And then, so yeah, I took all of my Sitka gear off and put on my Mossy Oak stuff, and it didn't help. I still suck.
Yeah. So I'm also very superstitious about that.
Really?
But I've got, you know, these brand new, cool, like Hunter Ranger Green or whatever, wool pants. I really want to wear them, but I also have my lucky outfit. You know, same thing. Like, I need a new hunting backpack, but this one, I've had it for so long.
I'm not like that at all. I have one hat that I always bring with me. I don't always wear it, but I always bring it with me.
That's like, I even have a...
But that's the only thing that I...
The casing from the first deer I ever shot.
Yeah.
I've got, like, the casing saved from it. Oh, yeah. And it stays in my hunting backpack, stuff like that, you know.
I don't bring them with me, but I have them.
Some of the other stuff. Oh, I bring it with... It's tied to my backpack. Like, I drilled a hole through it, and it's on the backpack now.
See, gear doesn't do that as much. I think it's... For me, I think it's more of, like,
your ritual, like, your routine, the way you go through things, or...
No, more like my presentation to the animal. So, like, camo was a big one that I struggled with because I was more successful in garage sale camouflage my first 3 years of hunting than I have been the past 3 years of hunting. But my first 3 years of hunting, I was also just put in a spot that was like, deer are going to be here every single night you sit here. You just have to decide, can I get them in range? You know, are they close enough for me to take a shot? And or do I want to shoot this deer? Because a lot of times you see spikes and, you know, whatever, and it's like, okay, I can't shoot that. But, you know, the past 3 years I've had to actually hunt, especially the past 3 years.
And it gets a lot harder.
Yeah. That's way harder. I mean, I love hunting on the farms because they're just like, come shoot does. You know, and it's great for target panic. If you're struggling with that, you just get experience shooting deer, and there's not a ton of pressure because it's, you know, oh, it's just a doe. But it's a completely different animal, you know, and that's why I'm excited to do this public land thing, because if we're successful on public land, it's only going to be because we put the time in to do it.
There's nothing better than that, than like picking out a spot on public land, going in there, hanging a stand, and then having deer come in range, or even if you don't get them or whatever, just having deer, it's like, okay, I was in the right spot.
Yeah.
Like, that feels like hunting.
And I'll be honest with you, I'm not going to leave anything in the woods there. Maybe a trail camera, but I'm going to hang and hunt, so I'll be in my saddle.
If I know I'm going to go back to the spot, sometimes I'll leave my platform there.
Take your
sticks.
And
take my sticks.
Yeah.
But not very often. You know, because someone can just bring a ladder and freaking take your stand or something, you know, it's like,
and you have a nice stand.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
Is you have that one of those lone wolves, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which I don't think they're a thing anymore.
No, they have a different version of it, but yeah.
Yeah.
It's owned by it because it's lone wolf and then lone wolf custom gear.
And I think the regular lone wolf, I think they just went out of business.
Yeah.
The custom gear one or whatever is a totally separate company.
And they make some really cool shit.
It's really sweet.
Just as expensive now.
It's way more expensive.
Yeah.
But it is really cool.
Yeah, because your stand is probably $400 right now on Marketplace. $450.
Yeah, something like that.
And
I think it was like $300 and then you got it like $150 in sticks or something.
I don't know, because my cousin has one. And I don't know if it's the custom gear or if it's a regular lone wolf, but they're unbelievable. I mean, they're the lightest weight tree stand I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah,
and it's
cool.
It's sweet, but I have the Predator platform from Tethered for saddle hunting. And if I had the Predator XL, or like Trophy Ridge makes one that's that's a little bit bigger, it's basically the same size as a hang-on stand, something you'd pack in. It just doesn't have a seat. It's just the platform.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because, like, the platform I have now is, you know, the regular Predator platform. It's probably as wide as this computer, you know, like 14, 15 inches.
Hmm.
And then it's got little wings on it at the end where you can put your feet out. And, yeah, I can turn around, I can stand on it upright and turn around away from the tree to shoot a deer if I wanted to.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's what, like, I have the lone wolf, and I can't remember if it's the Assault or the Alpha, but I have the bigger of the two.
Yeah.
Because I wanted just a little bit more room mm-hmm. and like up at our cabin and stuff. We try to sit all day. It's hard to sit all day in that lone wolf, but it's not the most comfortable thing. But I wanted just a little bit more room than the smaller one just seemed too small. It's lighter and it's nice for, you know, carrying it around, but.
So the custom gear guys got a new one out this year that doesn't have cables on the side.
Oh, really?
So you're not restricted with your feet. Because normally you have to keep your feet kind of forward away from those cables if you got big boots on.
Yeah.
Like the lacrosse boots.
Yeah.
They have one now that's cable-less.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Because I do that all the time. I'm hitting my boots on those cables.
Yep. You should check it out.
I should. I'm probably not going to buy another one because I'm poor, but.
Well, sell the one you have. You know.
That's true.
Speaking of
being, I want to get different sticks because I don't like the Lone Wolf sticks. They have the single step that flips either way.
No, you need to get a two-stepper.
It's a pain in the ass. I hate it.
Yeah. I would look at, if you like folding sticks, I would look at the tethered Skeletors because I've had really good luck with those sticks. I had the Hawk
what
Helions.
About the, what about the tethered one?
Yep, sticks? Tethered one sticks are good.
That's what my brother-in-law runs.
But they don't fold.
Right.
So if you're willing to carry them like that.
Yeah, I don't know if I quite need them to fold. But I do like the three-step, like the, I can't remember how, I mean, those are probably 3 feet or.
Oh, you like three steps?
Mm-hmm.
Gross.
Yeah, I don't know.
I run an 18-inch two-step.
And you run four of them?
I run four of them.
Yeah, so I was only running three of the three steps.
And you're still getting to 18, 20 feet.
Yeah, I usually set up a little bit lower than that. I set my top stick a little bit, or my stand a little bit under my top stick so that I can hang my backpack or anything on that top step. Yeah. So I usually don't hunt over 15 feet.
You know, that's something I don't think a lot of people consider is that elevation or height in a tree stand is not what people thought it used to be. You know, I specifically remember a tree stand that my dad had that was 25 feet tall. I don't know anybody that hunts at 25 feet nowadays.
I've heard of some people getting up there.
With a climber, for sure.
Yeah.
With a saddle, or like if you're hanging hunt, I don't know anybody that hunts that high. Because you don't need to. Mm. If you get to, honestly, I've hunted as low as like probably 12 or 15 feet, give or take. As long as you're
I've hung at like 8 or 10.
As long as you're out of the line of sight of deer and you've got some cover around you, you're good.
Right.
But most of the time I'm about probably 17 or 18 feet. Right. I do like to get up there a little bit just so I can see further because mm-hmm. most of the place I hunt is all flat. So I like to get up there a little bit, but you know, then you got to get back down. So when you're up there 20 feet and it's dark and you're just like,
that's one thing I got to get used to. Probably about right now is starting to hang my stand and just get used to it because I struggle with that every year. I just hate it. I hate hanging the thing.
You got to develop a system. And I change it all the time. You know, I mean, I've got that Kefaru this year, and I haven't ordered that Manimal yet, but I know I need to.
You should, because it's probably going to be out of stock pretty soon.
I know. But you were talking about being poor, and it's like, I probably should have waited to buy a bigger Kefaru pack, because I don't need one right now. And
you need the Manimal right now.
I need the Manimal.
You don't need the one that you bought.
I don't need the 44 mag.
Yeah.
Or no,
the Ma-Deuce.
The Ma-Deuce. Yeah. But it was also $200 off a 6,300 cubic inch bag. So there's that, you know.
Super good deal.
Saved a lot of money, yeah. And it's still quality built. So buy once, cry once, you know. This isn't financial advice, but do what you want to do. So yeah, to answer your question, Jared, I get a little bit superstitious with that, but with gear and everything, it's like always chasing that. How can I be better? You know, same thing with saddle hunting. I saw a guy. I'll give him a shout out. Genesis 3D Printing. They make a bunch of 3D printed parts for saddle hunting, and he was at the Total Archery Challenge at Crystal Mountain this year.
He had a booth set up.
Yep. And so I was checking out some of his stuff, and you know, I have a good amount of experience in CAD and 3D printing and saw what he was doing. And I was like, I like this, but I'm going to change this to work better for me. And I 3D printed a couple of MOLLE loops to hold my platform on. Yeah, dude. It's sweet. And when it's custom fit for your platform and your specific saddle,
right?
You know, it's like, it's awesome. So, kind of copied his idea, but I'm not selling them, so it doesn't matter. And it was free for me. You know, it was a couple hours in CAD and 40 minutes to print the thing, so whatever.
I've never thought about that 3D printing stuff.
When I first got into 3D printing, I wanted to 3D print a sight for my bow, and then, you know, just because it's super lightweight, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just plastic, but it's the tolerances aren't good enough to have
like
moving
parts.
Yeah,
that'd
it's
be
not.
Really involved.
I've 3D printed fork rests for drop away rests, like that ripcord that I have.
Yeah, right.
I've 3D printed a couple of forks for that.
That's cool.
Yeah, for running fatter diameter arrows,
mm-hmm.
it'll hold it a little bit better. So, because I was running, I think they were 7.5 millimeter old Black Eagle arrows, I think is what they were.
Hmm.
Like an old line splitter type of.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just a little bit fatter. And I was like, I don't know, 16. Picked them up at a garage sale. It was like $20 for a dozen arrows. And they were perfect length. So, tried shooting those for a little bit, but I never could get them to fit on my fork rest because they were too fat, so it was like hitting the sides.
Right.
And then when I got my first 3D printer, I 3D printed a fork rest that fit it, and then realized the arrows were garbage, so moved away from it, but it's fun.
Yeah.
I like That's doing cool. that practical stuff with the 3D printer.
Right.
So. Sweet. I 3D printed a bow grip one time.
For
Yeah, for my hunting bow.
That's cool.
It was a flat back grip. And then
I thought about doing that for my prime because that's just or putting some sort of grip on it because it's just aluminum.
Mm-hmm.
It gets so cold.
If you if we have a pair of calipers, we can just take some measurements and I could easily print something for that.
I don't know where I'd find a pair of calipers.
I do. Just have to fight the man that owns them.
I have some. I have a couple pair.
Don't break them just to get a rise out of me.
I might. It's kind of my deal.
Yeah. I don't know. Everyone's making changes, though. Maybe John Dudley's superstitious. That's why he went back to Hoyt.
Maybe.
That's wild, dude. I did not expect that at all. Because when he went in with PSE, he was like all in.
Oh, yeah.
He had his own custom line of bows.
Right.
You know, and I'm like.
Yeah, him and like Rogan and all those guys are shooting PSEs.
Well, Rogan and Jocko are shooting a PSE
because
Dudley
right.
is shooting a PSE.
Yeah, he set them up with them. I'm sure they're all switched to Hoyt now. Or at least Jocko will.
Jocko will switch to Hoyt. And he's with Jocko for hunting gear, too. I don't know if he's officially left Sika gear, but it does make me curious because I'm wearing the range pants right now. These are getting discontinued.
Oh, really?
So if you want a pair, go buy them, SikaGear.com, $90 a piece.
I'll wait for them to hit Camo Fire.
Camo Fire. Oh,
you know what Camo Fire
the website, yeah.
It's like the discontinued stuff. They just have crazy deals on. And usually it's like, you know, last year stuff and stuff that's discontinued. They'll have them for, you know, 50% off or 60% off or something.
Yeah, I've used EuroOptic a lot. And I recommend that to anybody if you're looking to get discounted hunting gear or, you know, if you're getting into Sika gear or any expensive gear, Sika, First Light, whatever. Take advantage of those deals. Get on their email list. Let them give you a bunch of promos and, you know, Sika runs deals all the time. all the time I get emails for stuff.
Oh yeah. I would never pull full or pay full price for stuff like that.
Close out, you know.
Yeah, either closeouts or Black Friday or I mean people have so many sales now.
I paid full price for one piece of Sika gear. Two. The Fanatic hoodie and the Fanatic beanie.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't find them. They don't go on sale enough. The Fanatic hoodie I could have, but at the time it was like I need it cuz the season's starting. But even the Fanatic jacket and bibs, I wanted them at the beginning of November when it was really cold, and I roughed it out with the Stratus system until Black Friday when they were 25% off. So, save some money.
Yeah, it's a way to go.
But I'm going to be really, really curious to see what Origin does with somebody like Dudley on the team, because that guy has been bow hunting for years.
I'm excited and for it.
Like these pants right here, this was at least partially Dudley's design, mm-hmm. you know, like his ideas, his concepts or whatever. So, I mean, if Origin starts making stuff like this, I'm going to have to be an Origin guy. I mean, they just have to change that camo pattern. It's so ugly.
Dude, I love the camo pattern.
It is so ugly.
I don't think so at all. I think it's super cool.
Not that Sika's any better.
Yeah, Sika sucks for camo.
It's so... What happened... Why can't we
It's like a mix of the old like tiger stripe Vietnam camo.
It does not look as good. It looks like the Walmart version.
I don't think so. I really like it. And I'm not a fan of camo. Like I don't like really much camo. But I like that. That
What happened to Mossy Oak and Realtree? Where the fuck did these guys go? Why can't we just get high quality camo gear in the camo patterns that we grew up using?
I'm gonna be honest, I don't wear camo. I wear a red wool jacket. Archery season, I've got like, I don't know, maybe a little bit of Mossy Oak, but I think when I shot my buck, I was wearing, with a bow, I think I was wearing a white winter ski jacket.
Yeah, which is fine.
With my harness on over top.
That's the color of the sky, so you're chilling.
Yeah.
But. Yeah, I think camo's overrated. I started buying all my stuff in solids.
Me too.
And
especially mid layers.
Yeah.
Because
you
go out west and
you can camo long johns on. It's like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, I'm guilty of it, but
you never know, you might get hot.
Doesn't serve a purpose.
That's true.
Strip down just the long johns.
No, but like most of these hunt solids colors, like especially from Sika gear, they're like browns and tans and greens and like that naturally exist. If you're wearing a brown hoodie, like that pyrite color that they have,
mm-hmm.
and you get hot and you take off your outer layer and you just have that and you're leaning up against a tree, guess what? You're basically the same color as the tree. So you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
I will say that the Sika camouflage, that Elevated 2, you stick out like a sore thumb in greenery and on the ground, but you put that in the air and it's actually pretty impressive how well that'll break it up. Yeah. Guys love to shit on it just because it's Sika gear and everybody hates Sika. You either love them or hate them. There's mm-hmm. no in between. And
I feel like I'm in between.
You're probably the only person I know that's in between.
Yeah, I have a couple of Sika things.
But I also, you're one of those guys that just loves to have a bunch of different brands, though, too.
Yeah.
I'm
not loyal to any brand except for Origin. I really like them. If I could afford to have all Origin gear, I would. Definitely.
I love what Origin stands for. I just want more innovation from them. Because that hoodie, like the advantage of...
They're starting. They're really, I mean, because they're pretty new. Like, true. They're relatively new. They're dropping rain gear here pretty soon. And that's they're cool. They're coming out with a fall line. They've been showing some...
But like the advantage to wearing something like QU, First Light, Sika gear... You're getting a piece that is designed to do what you're doing, right? So my Sika hoodies are form-fitting, tight around the arms, shorter sleeves. They don't go, like, way past your hand or whatever. The hoods are more form-fitting to be able to wrap around your head so that the hood moves with your neck and doesn't stay stationary, whereas that Origin hoodie is built more like a Carhartt hoodie.
Right,
because
it's just
basically
a normal hoodie.
It's a normal hoodie with a camo pattern on it.
Right.
Versus these other hoodies, like the Kiln hoodie from First Light, or a Sika Traverse hoodie or Ambient hoodie. These are hunting hoodies that happen to have camouflage pattern.
Right.
So, that is what I would be looking for from Origin, is a purpose-built piece of clothing.
And I think that's why they're bringing Dudley on board.
Which is awesome.
Because they want to do that. I mean, they started off with, like, jiu-jitsu gis. They only did that.
Really?
And then now they are doing the, you know.
You're wearing their jeans right now.
Yeah, I have their jeans, their t-shirt, boots, and everything.
I know they're Origin jeans because they don't have stains all over them, which means you haven't worn them to work.
Yeah, that's true. We were talking about that when you got here, or before you got here.
Yeah, versus I know Jared's worked in those ones because they're a little brown spot on the knee.
Right? Yeah, there's kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
All my jeans are work jeans.
But they started doing just regular clothes,
right.
And then now they're branching out into the hunting stuff. So, I mean, I think most of their hunt gear is less than a year old, like, or it's probably a year.
And I'm not dogging on them. I mean, props to them for trying. I think they just need to not play into the commercialization of that.
Oh, for sure.
Whereas Sika, like, the fact that if you and I were to have bought our DuPont jackets at retail price, we would have paid $375 is fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Because it's basically a North Face. You know, North Face doesn't use Gore-Tex branding on most of their stuff, but like my mom's North Face and my DuPont jacket are built very similarly,
mm-hmm.
and there's a $200 price difference,
right.
Which is unbelievable. You know, like you're just paying for the brand at that point, and I'm not interested in that.
Yeah.
I appreciate the quality of gear that they do make, but like the Fanatic hoodie, everybody tells you, oh, go buy the Fanatic hoodie. It's going to be your base layer. It's the workhorse, whatever. It's not warm. It's about as warm as a thick flannel.
Right.
The Traverse hoodie, you know, I've got the predecessor to that, which is a Gradient hoodie in the truck right there. That hoodie's warm, but it's not windproof. None of their mid layers are windproof or waterproof. So you have to constantly have a shell.
Yeah. I like having a windproof mid layer.
I know. It makes so much sense.
Yeah. I'm glad First Light's starting to do, because they never had like a windproof anything. And they're starting.
No, their big jacket's windproof because it's waterproof.
It wasn't for a long time.
It was waterproof and not windproof?
Yeah.
How did that work?
Well, no, like
the zippers?
What is it? The
Solitude?
The Solitude was not waterproof and not windproof. They said
it's just warmth. Yeah.
It was wind resistant.
Yeah.
But it never had like an actual windproof one. Now they do.
Yeah, so Sika uses Gore-Tex wind stopper
yeah.
in the Fanatic jacket, and that thing, like, I could ride my motorcycle with that on and you wouldn't feel the wind.
And that's what I always wanted, because I had a wool pullover. I'd run a mid layer or whatever, but like wool's not windproof at all. So you'd freeze. So I'd always run like a fleece or a puffy or something that would just give me that little bit of wind protection.
Fleece doesn't have good wind protection either, but
sure?
Yeah, I'm sure.
I have a couple fleece jackets that are like pretty windproof.
If they have like an outer shell, they'll be good. Yeah. If you put on like a fleece Columbia, wind will cut right through that.
Hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, like the Tri-Duck sweaters or whatever that we have.
Those will cut right through it.
Right?
Yep.
You can see through those.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
They're really warm.
Yeah.
You put wind on
them,
warm.
Maybe the fleece
it.
That I have is have like a wind layer in it or something.
Does it have some sort of texture on the outside?
No,
or
it's
is it
just
fleece
on the outside.
Hmm.
But now that I think about it, it might have a like a little tag on it that says
wind stopper,
you know,
or something.
Yeah, something like that. I have an old EMS. You guys remember EMS? You're probably too young for that.
No, too young, I'm sure.
Eastern Mountain Sports. They used to have right where over by like PetSmart. And
are you talking a brick and mortar store?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it was like the only kind of backpacking store that we had around.
Oh, before forever. Backcountry North?
Yeah, way before that.
It's
probably been gone for 15 years.
I want an REI.
I do too.
Okay, well, 15 years ago, you got to remember I was 7.
Right. That's why, like, I didn't go in there as an adult. Like, I was just in there with, you know, as a kid with my dad. But my dad had so much EMS stuff, but he still does. I mean, the stuff was great.
Yeah, my dad has
Todd's bag at work, his little.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
That's an EMS bag.
Yeah. The, my dad has a full kit of Scentlock gear and like live by, die by that shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is the best hunting gear.
Yeah.
Ever. My dad, it's the same way with his bow, too.
My dad was the same way. He had Scentlock stuff and whatever. And then I started buying First Light, and he jumped shit pretty fast.
My dad started seeing me walk out of the house with my stuff on. He's like, "You didn't scent? What are you doing?" I'm playing the wind, dude. Like, it's fine. Right.
I still have a couple. Like, I have a light jacket that's Scentlock.
How often do you wash your clothes, though?
I have pants.
Hunting clothes do not get washed.
Yeah, they do.
Once a year.
You wash them at the beginning of the season.
Yeah. Nope.
And then you keep them in a...
They get stuck in a tote.
With a scent-free detergent, I'm not talking about washing them with fucking Downy. Yeah. I wash my stuff once at the beginning now. I used to wash it almost every time I hunted with scent killer detergent. Yeah. Yeah. But this is before I knew what I was doing. Before I thought I knew what I was doing.
Right.
But now I wash it one time at the beginning of the season, and then I keep it in a scent-free tote.
I keep mine in a tote with pine branches in there.
Mine probably just smells like BO. I do that too. Yeah.
Pine needles and cedar branches.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cedar is impressive.
And you go hunt somewhere where there's no pine trees.
There's pine trees everywhere I hunt. But yeah, it's like a bunch of oaks, and the deer are like, what's that?
Yeah, but they're going to, I mean.
It's the last thing they smell.
That too. Do you remember that nose jammer product?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
It was like vanilla.
Yeah. Yeah. And because they're like, do you know what I'm talking about, Jared? Nose jammer?
No.
So the selling point.
I still
have
some of that.
The selling point of this product is it's literally like a smoke grenade, basically. You'd get into your stand and I don't remember if you like pull the tab or whatever. You open this canister.
I have like an aerosol.
Yeah.
Like get in your stand.
The idea is like you spray it and the smell. It was vanilla, and it was so strong. They're like, oh, it's going to overwhelm the deer's senses. All they're going to smell is vanilla. And then there's a bunch of scientists that came out and were like, yeah, hey, the reason this product doesn't work is because the deer smells a shit ton of vanilla plus everything else because their senses don't work the same way that ours do.
Yeah.
Which is the same reason you could go stink up the bathroom, spray Febreze in there, and you're going to smell shit and Febreze.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Sometimes I take vanilla, like the vanilla concentrate and like dilute it a little bit.
Yeah.
And I'll just spray that around.
Well, it is a natural scent that occurs when bucks like rub their head in branches or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they said it was supposed to be like a calming thing. I was like, dude, this is such a scam.
Yeah.
No, I think the only like aerosol stuff that I used was, I think it's called Tank Number 69.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
It's Tanks. Like dopest, and it smells so bad, and it never fails. Like, I'll crack open a Arnold Palmer or something, and I'll set it down on the shelf, and I'll go and spray that, and then the wind will blow it right back in the blind, and you can feel it, like, hit your face, and you know that it landed on the can, too, and it's you're drinking dopest.
The worst is
the
buck attractant from Tinks. Because it doesn't just smell like piss. It's like, it's just rancid. It smells like a gut shot.
Yeah,
it's
that's
so bad.
The one that is like dough and rut.
Yeah.
So it's like
estrus.
Yeah, it smells bad.
It's
and
so
then
bad.
The other one we did one year was called a buck bomb. It was just like a can of dough and rut piss.
Mm-hmm.
But you basically pull a pin on it and the thing explodes and just shoots dough piss fucking everywhere.
It's literally a grenade.
Yeah. It's a grenade of piss.
I don't use that stuff much, but I mean, I have had good luck with, you know, hanging the little, you know, you dip the little felt
apple
in there
scent or whatever.
No, it's like the
little,
you can do piss too. Yeah.
It's like a wool.
Yeah. You dip that. I mean, I've had deer, you know, hit that, you know, where the wind's blowing or whatever, they hint that scent and they're turned right in. You know, if there's buck and rut, whatever, I've had it work.
I think everything is going to work to a certain extent. The problem is when people, like Ozonics,
if you overuse it.
Yeah, well, like that.
Or you're running like, you know, doe estrus and it's not even close to the rut.
Oh, yeah. Like guys who bleat on opening day of archery season.
Right.
I was like, dude, what the hell?
I've had deer come in. I was running back when I first started bow hunting. You know, I was running scent out there and stuff, the, you know, doe estrus in, you know, early October. And I had a buck come in, smell that, and instantly turn away.
Yeah.
It was like, well, what the hell? That didn't work. Because it just knew something was off. It was like, nah, I don't like that.
Yep.
And it was weird, but
so like not, that, not that weird. Like that Ozonics product?
Yeah.
I'm sure that works. It, you know what I'm talking about?
The ozone, yeah.
Creates a layer of ozone around you, whatever. But if you're relying on that to do all of your scent control, it's only going to do so much. And there is an odor that it... Ozone does have a slight odor to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So eventually deer are going to recognize whatever that is. You know what I mean? So
right.
It's hard to do that. You know, at the end of the day, it's like Fred Bear said, best camouflage ever made. It's called sit down and shut up. You right. know, it's like, or be still and shut up, whatever. Yeah. You know, play the wind and outsmart the deer. But we don't have to have all these fancy products to do it all the time.
Yeah. I have had good luck in the last couple of years with mock scrapes.
So well, mock scrapes, that's different, though.
You can, those mock scrapes, you don't even have to use, like,
you can just piss on it yourself.
You can, piss on yourself. Yeah. Yeah. The deer will get after it.
Oh, yeah. I used last year when I shot that buck, the used that DH3. It's the guy here local, the Deer Hunter podcast. Yeah. He runs it. That shit worked.
Dude, like, the best time to hunt those scrapes is like right after it rains, because what I've done is right before it rains, you know, you're talking about hunting multiple days, you know, in October or whatever,
right?
And you're hunting, you know, it's Thursday night and you've got rain coming Saturday morning. It's like, okay, I'm gonna piss on this scrape right now, and there's probably not gonna be a deer come hit this tonight. But then it's going to rain Saturday morning, and then you hunt Saturday night, you know, close proximity to that scrape, and there's a buck hitting that. He's on his way. It rained. He's going to go freshen that up. He's going to get probably might get a hint of your scent still left over, you know, depending on how hard it rained, and then he's just going to get pissed off. You hit him with that grunt, comes charging in. You look at his rack. He's just a 6-point. Story of my life, but... Yeah, it excites me to just get back after it.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of back to that Fred Bear thing. I know my dad, one year, he set out, just built a brush blind, basically. Grabbed a bunch of brush and some mechanic wire, and tied it all together and made, like, a rest and whatnot, and then sat on a stump. I think we gotta try something like that. Go back to the old style of hunting, you know?
I've hunted on the ground a lot. I mean, I do that almost every year, where I'll just go sit up against a tree or sit on the ground.
I'm a pretty spoiled hunter. I've got my Mr. Buddy heater and snacks, and Grandma makes me no bakes. So.
The best
hunt. That's not a bad way to do it. It's pretty comfortable.
It's pretty awesome.
It makes it easy to sit all day when you got snacks and a heater and stuff. It's pretty nice.
I'm gonna make a confession here. I have never hunted with a heater before.
My first time was last year.
Really?
Yeah.
So I'm kind of an idiot.
I built a fire in my blind.
You know, the best hunt I ever had. Everyone wants the heat in brush
at night when it's cold, right? Like, I turn mine off because I feel like the light is
the glow
screwing things up.
Oh,
right?
For sure. Yeah. If it's dark, like,
so it's funny because my dad and my dad's buddy and whatnot, they will wait until it gets darker and colder, and then they'll turn it on. I keep mine on during the day, heat up the blind, and hope that it, you know, a little bit of residual heat stays there, and then I turn it off as soon as it starts to get even a little bit dark.
What you could do is...
Which probably just makes me colder, but...
Right.
Well, what you could do is bring in, you know, an outer layer coat with you, and then get that, take that off once you get into your blind with the heat cranked, and get it warm enough to where you can sit there in just like a hoodie or something like that.
Yeah, I'm usually sitting there in jeans and a hoodie. Yeah. In, like, the middle of winter.
Yeah.
It's pretty warm in there. But
I was... The best hunt I had was sitting on the ground in a homemade blind. Jake and I stacked up a bunch of brush. And it was... we made the blind, like, a week before. And we were hunting out of that. And then there was another ladder stand on the property. But it was, like, the middle of the week. In November, right before Thanksgiving, you know, so it's like, it's go time. And I was bow hunting, and might not have been rifle season yet. So it might have been, like, you know, November 10th or something like that. But we had a snow day, We had like 2 feet of snow overnight, and I went and sat in that blind and packed like hand warmers into my boots and was bundled up like crazy or whatever, and had one of the best sits of my life. Didn't shoot a deer because I couldn't. I had to stand up to be able to shoot them, to shoot at anything. And so this buck came out, like a big framed 6 point that I wanted to shoot. And I stood up, and as soon as I stood up, I was on one of the fallen branches I couldn't see because it was snowed over, and it cracked, and he turned around and saw me, and it was just... But I saw a lot of deer, and it was really cool because I was completely invisible, just sitting in a bunch of brush, watching deer.
I make brush blinds a lot. Like, it's a pretty good tactic. The thing that kind of sucks on state land is if I've made them.
Yeah.
And then you walk in, and there's someone there.
Oh, yeah.
It really sucks.
Yeah.
I usually try to mark them with like a tag or something and put the year on it so they know. I mean, because you make it a month beforehand or something. And sometimes it starts to tell. Is it last year's or is it this year's? Or
well,
whatever.
The other thing you could do is get into the woods at like 11 a.m. and build your blind and then just sit there for the evening hunt. That would guarantee that you have like the ability to use that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe at that point I just sit against a tree.
Probably.
I've been building a blind before and had deer walk up on me. Like, I'm, like, you know, breaking sticks and you know, doing the whole thing. And I've turned around and had a, you know, little spike or something just standing there. And it's like,
he's like, hey, what are you doing
there, bud?
Yeah, and it's like, you're lucky that it's not quite season yet. Because I always build them.
The biggest deer I've ever seen have been right before the season.
Yeah.
And it's like, you see this giant buck in velvet, and you're like, oh, my gosh, it's going to be so awesome to bow hunt him this year. And then you never see him.
Yeah.
He just goes to the neighbor's property and gets shot by a 10-year-old during youth season.
Yep.
That's where she goes.
Kid's never hunted before. Shoots a 140 first deer.
Yeah. My first deer was pretty big.
Last deer was big. Although I looked back at the picture on it. His G3 short. Yeah. On the one side.
Right.
Which kind of sucks, but.
I've got a kind of a funny story about that, and I don't know if it was his first year hunting or what, but my dad's oldest brother, he was young. It was like his first or one of his first few years hunting, and my grandpa's taking him out and whatnot, and he goes out, shoots an 8-point first thing, and we never had big bucks back on the property. Shoots an 8-point, and then on the way back in, they see another 8-point, and he, you know, they're walking, so they stop, and he pulls up his rifle to shoot it again. And my grandpa grabs the rifle out of his hand and says, ain't no goddamn punk kid of mine going to shoot 2 8-points in his first day ever hunting or something like that. He shoots the buck right there in front of him.
Oh, my God.
Stole the rifle and shot it for him.
That's funny.
Or instead of him.
Right.
He's like, you're not taking 2 8-points. Yeah, it's funny because, like, we never see big bucks like that. So,
right.
I mean, nowadays, but.
Yeah. Dude, you guys have some really nice deer.
Nowadays, like, back when I shot my 5-point, that was a nice buck. And it's
everybody's been there,
barely
though.
A 5-point.
When you shoot that first buck that has, like, a little bit of distinct antlers, that's not just, like, a spike. Like, he's a giant.
No, that was like, that wasn't even like a giant for me. That was just big for the property. We didn't have big deer on the property.
Yeah.
But, you know, now with proper land management, there's an obvious difference.
Right. That's how it is up on my cabin. I mean, still, like, if you shoot a buck, it's like, hell yeah.
Like, last year, everybody was like, holy shit.
Oh, yeah. That was, I mean,
my dad,
that was unheard of up there.
For the longest time, I think he was 16 when he got it. He got an 8-point, and it was the property record, and he held it up until the 1 year we got, when I got that 10-point, my grandpa got an 11, and my dad's buddy got a, I think it was 11 or 10, would have been 13, but it had a broken off drop tine and a broken off just regular point tine.
Who has the record now?
Oh, definitely that buck is still the record.
The one your dad shot?
No, the one his buddy shot. The one that would have been a 13. It's just a slob of a buck. He nicknamed it Buford.
Buford.
Yeah. No, that was a hell of a buck. And then, you know, my grandpa's 11-point was pretty big too, and that 10 is, you know, right there with it. But yeah,
who's got this little 8-point right here?
I think that was just one that my dad shot back when he was younger. It just, I don't know, just thought it looked good as decoration, so I snagged it.
There you go. He's probably got plenty.
Yeah, we had a whole wall of them growing up. You know, little 2-points and fours, but and then 1-8.
It's always funny to look back at those and be like, "Why did I shoot that deer?"
Because that's all there was.
That's true. I mean, I think about the first
stuff too.
Right. I think about the first deer I shot, which was a spike. You know, it's technically a 4-point. You know, whatever it's got. It's got a spike antler with a tiny little brow tine and tiny little split at the top.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like that was the only deer that I saw that night, and it was just like, yep, it's legal deer. Boom. Done.
Oh yeah, I've shot spikes. It's like it's the only deer I've seen all season.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of a rough transition here, but does anyone else watch football? Because preseason is starting.
Yeah, I did see that. I was surprised that preseason's already starting. Yeah,
it's kind of bummed that they're, you know, it is preseason, so obviously they're going to, but it's a little bit bummed they're playing all the bad players right now.
Well, I mean, but, yeah, that's kind of to be expected, I guess.
Yeah, I know, but still, I want to see, like, I'm ready for football season, you know, over the weekend and whatnot, the fun. We started a fantasy league and whatnot, so.
Oh, dude. I wish I had enough friends that were into fantasy football to have a league.
These aren't even, like, people that I know. It was just all the other groomsmen and stuff from the bachelor party. They were like,
oh, there
we're
you go.
Starting a fantasy league. It's going to be fun. I'm like, I don't know, you guys. Whatever, I guess.
Yeah. That's, like, my favorite thing. The other day at the shop, landscapers came in, cut the lawn, like, right before we left. And I walked outside, and I could just smell, like, fresh-cut grass, and it was cooler. And I was like, oh, dude, it's freaking football season, like right now. That just gets me super hyped.
We'll see how this team does. I think I need to do a fantasy league with some of my buddies from college. But
who's your quarterback?
Jared
Goff.
Yeah, dude.
There you go.
This so the team that I just built over the weekend is like mainly Lions players, just because I thought it was funny and we were screwing around. And I was hammered when we were doing this, so, you know, bachelor party. But, no, it's mainly Lions players, so I'm going to be screwed week 5, but.
In my first time I did fantasy football, I had Drew Brees as my quarterback, and I had, I think it was Antonio Brown at the time as one of my receivers. So, like, I had a pretty decent team, and I came in last place. I was the worst. Or the second worst.
So it was kind of funny. Last year, I got locked out of my account.
So you couldn't change anything?
I was added to it, but then I got locked out of it because I forgot the password and I just was having a heck of a time and I just gave up. So I ended up auto-drafting everything. And then so mine was basically just the robo team. And I ended up getting like 4th place overall in the league. It was funny. Everyone was pissed.
Do you manage your team or do you just let it
go? No, it was like I was locked out. It was just the robo team. Like,
oh, straight
didn't
up,
manage 100%. It. It was just everything was done just based off of the app.
Yeah, that's rough.
But still got 4th place, so.
It's fun.
I didn't do anything for it, but there's zero skill, but whatever.
Yeah, one of my favorite, I mean, I love football in general. I'm not a huge fan of the NFL just because in years prior it was too political and it's gotten better now and but it just they keep changing all the rules to it, you know, like they changed the kickoff this year and that came from the XFL and mm-hmm. I just prefer college, but honestly I'd rather watch a high school football game than an NFL game right now. It's cool to see the Lions win.
I gotta ask, is this the year?
No. No, one more year.
Cause like
one more
year
for a playoff run.
Pretty close.
One more year for a playoff run, I would say. But Dan Campbell knows his shit. And it is exciting to watch the Lions.
It was so exciting last year being up at school with my buddies, and it's just like every single football game that we could watch, we watched. We're getting excited. It was so much fun.
It's cool. And I like watching the Chiefs just because I think Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes are funny.
They're funny.
Duo is just
I don't funny, like the but. Chiefs, but I we like watching them.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I never used to watch football. Like, I was not into it, didn't like it, anything like that. It was just like, all right, whatever, put it on the TV. Like, I never paid attention. Now I, like, actively watch it. So yeah. It's kind of funny.
No, it's, I get too into it, too far into it. I get, like, Notre Dame fan, obviously. And, if they aren't doing well, I get fucking pissed. I'll start like screaming at the TV, you know.
We were getting pissed about some stuff last year. Like we scream at the TV.
Our
favorite thing was to do an impression of Dan Campbell, and like WWE because he looks like he could.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah,
have you seen a picture of him with long hair?
Screaming at him from that screaming and stuff. It was funny.
Have you seen a picture of him with long hair from that 2009 season?
I have not, no.
Oh, dude. It's funny. He looks like Chris Hemsworth in Thor.
Yeah.
He's got long hair like that. It's funny. But, yeah, I don't know. I've watched football in the stand before. Have you ever done that?
No.
Yeah, when you can stream football games on your phone, and I've set my phone up. I've got a little
I think my dad's buddy, the one that shot that big buck, the property record buck, I think he watches football out there while he's doing it.
Yeah, I don't have a TV. I'm watching it on my phone, but
no, he's doing it on his phone as well. We don't have we're not that bougie.
Have a TV set up in your box blind.
There are guys that have
it's like
duck blinds too. They have like a full kitchen.
Yeah, full kitchen, bunk beds. It's basically their hunting camp. But it's
literally a house.
That's their blind.
I've seen people do it, like use a camper and just open the window.
Yeah.
Just set it
but
in front of
But that's their blind.
Just set it in front of a field and then just like.
If you go down to. It's weird. If you go down to like.
I'm like, all probably, right, that's not hunting.
Right.
And they've got like a big old table set up with office chairs and stuff, and they're playing card games and watching football games or drinking and cooking
food.
Oh,
there's a deer out there.
And then
there.
They go wander over and they're like, oh, hey, look, a deer.
Right.
They take their pick of like 10 different 12 points and take the biggest one. You know, it's like, okay, you're not hunting.
The duck guys is what's funny because they'll have shifts. So you get to like a bayou, you know, and it's just like all swampy, whatever. They build this.
Some of that, though, looks like a lot of fun.
No,
like,
I've never been duck hunting. I want to go duck hunting this year.
My buddy has taken me, like, I've only ever deer hunted. Yeah. And my buddy, he does everything with his dad, and he's like, dude, just come out with us.
The problem is I hate the taste of duck. So duck hunting.
Did you try that
fun.
Duck
dude,
that,
I
that
love
Todd
duck.
Made? That like duck confit or whatever?
When was that?
Confit.
At the summit?
I think it was at the summit.
Or was it at Tim's thing?
No, it was at the summit.
Probably not.
Man, it was super good. Obi was into it.
I might have been
Obi
hammered.
Obi ate way more.
No, I'm just kidding.
No, we were. I was like, we were at work.
I was waiting for you guys to catch on to that, and I was like, yeah. Anyway,
it was super good though. Like he made it. Like I think that was the only time I've tried duck, but it was really good.
Duck breast can be okay, but there's like I don't know. It's just a different.
I've had duck quite a few times, but I also feel like there's a big difference between wild duck and like farm raised or whatever.
Was Todd's wild duck?
I think so, yeah.
Like, he went duck hunting?
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
But he had, like, some sauce with it and stuff. Like, you took it and, like, pulled it apart. And,
you
like,
have to. You
like,
can't.
Put it
like,
on a cracker
like
with, like,
venison,
sauce. Like,
elk venison, I can eat with, honestly, even whitetail venison, I can eat with salt and pepper.
Oh, yeah. Backstrap.
Yeah. But duck, I would have to have some sort of extra seasoning or sauce or something. Like, cowboy butter would probably be good with duck.
Good story from some family friends was... We had some family up in the UP, and my dad goes, hey, Canadian goose, like, I always see, you know, sometimes people hunt them and whatnot, like, how do you eat that? And, you know, the family friend or family, I forget exactly what it was. He goes, oh, yeah, it's real good. You you take the whole thing, you wrap it up in bacon, throw it on the smoker for a few hours, let her sit, build up a bunch of smoke, take it off the smoker, eat the bacon, throw away the geese.
My neighbor is big into goose hunting, and he makes
I know guys
jerky.
That are big into, well, I don't know guys. I know of a couple of guys that are big into coyote, eating coyotes. Mm. Yeah.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, it seems.
I don't care. No, I wouldn't even try it.
What?
They're eating venison, though. Like.
Yeah, they eat good.
They also eat garbage.
Yeah.
And rotted deer and.
I think, like, I mean, I'd try anything, like, at least once.
If it was right in front of me, I'd probably try it, but it's too close to domestic dog. It's weird.
You see that Meat Eater episode where they cooked one, like, hair on?
They do that a lot, yeah. It was fun. They do that with pig.
That's, like, too much for me.
They do hair on with pigs a lot, too.
Yeah, right.
There's a specific type of, do you know what that's called?
Hmm.
There's a specific type of, specific name for cooking pork with the fur on, type of roast you can do, but
weird.
Yeah, I don't know. All good stuff. I'm excited for the season. Hopefully we can get a little bit of an update, maybe in the next 2 weeks. Origin will release something with Dudley, get an update about that, get our bows dialed in, get some stuff rolling, but
it's getting closer.
I think it's time to wrap it up. Fellas got anything else?
I don't think so.
That was a good episode.
Yeah. Appreciate everyone listening. Catch you in the next one.